nyc.gov/hello or call 311.
All right, 311. Democracy Now! With Nermeen Sheikh today, usually with Amy Goodman, on Democracy Now!, listener-sponsored commercial-free radio since 1960. Thanks to listeners just like you. Take a moment, won't you, and consider becoming a sustaining member, a BAI buddy, for as little as $10 a month. Right now, it's 9 a.m. here in New York City, and please stay tuned for Equal Rights and Justice with Mimi Rosenberg.
Says Peter Tosh. I'm Mimi Rosenberg, and this is Equal Rights and Justice, where we educate, agitate, and organize to empower we the people for a far better world is possible when we have the tools and to work to make it so. And now, an Equal Rights and Justice special. Oh, free, free Palestine. Free, free Palestine. From the river to the sea. Every inch of Palestine must be decolonized. We can't be complacent. When we stay silent, injustice thrives. So we speak up with our Palestinian siblings to commemorate the 75 years since Nakba, the Arabic word for catastrophe, Nakba, where violent militias forcibly killed untold numbers of Palestinians and removed by force close to 800,000 Palestinians from their homes and villages. The Nakba continues as the Israeli government is still trying to eradicate, erase, remove from the land, from the memory, from history, the Palestinian people, the entire Palestinian people, and with military support from the U.S. for what is now operating as an apartheid system of oppression against the Palestinians. But we will not be silent. As we said, when we stay silent, injustice thrives. And now, free, free Palestine.
Try to imagine yourself living in these tents, Not for a day, not for a week, not for a month, not for a year. Suppose you imagine yourself that all your life you are going to stay in this tent. Believe me, you will make a gorilla. You will go and fight. Fight for your land. Fight for your home. Fight for your country.
Next, I would like to invite up to the stage with us from Jenin, Palestine, Sirin.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Ramadan Mubarak to all of you. I'm here not to introduce Sirin from Jenin. I want you to know Iyad Sawalha from Jenin. This is my brother. Iyad was arrested. This is the last time I saw him. I took this picture. 12 years old, brought to be a Palestinian, wear all the time his sweaters made by my aunt of the Palestinian flag. Iyad spent 8 years in prison. He was released in 1999. With also agreement, within 2 years, in the sex of Ramadan, he had wake up in the morning to have suhoor in Jenin. He never finished his food. The house was bombed. Iyad was killed. I watched like all American in CNN, my body, his body, peeling out of the rampage. I saw my brother full of his blood. That's the only time I saw him. It's not just that. I want to speak in behalf of all the Palestinians in Jenin and Nablus. I want to condemn the media when they said he's a terrorist. He's a freedom fighter. He's a freedom fighter. He's a hero. He spent all his teenager in prison without sentence. And when he was sentenced for a kid throwing rocks, he was sentenced to 120 years in prison. And when he was released for no crime he committed, he was assassinated within less than 2 years. I'm not just, I wrote a book, it's called My Land, My Brother. It's coming soon by Stanford Press. But I want to tell you, it's not just Iyad. My family all suffered in Jenin. My house was marched in by Israeli soldiers in August. Ask all my dad in wheelchair and my sister and brother to get out of the house without their clothes, barefoot, and was told the house where Iyad was born has to be teared down. And yes, they put bombs in front of my mom and dad and brother and sister eyes, blow the house, put the city under curfew. My family has to stay in the street for hours. Nobody could give them clothes or shoes. My sister begged the Israeli soldier for my dad's wheelchair. They says no. For his walker. They says no. They let him crawl out of his house. Blood in front of our eyes. Yes, we have another house in Jenin now. I still dream of that house. I cannot dream with a new house. My mother is gone. When people ask me, does your children look like you? I say, I don't have a baby picture to know that. My house was gone. My memory was gone. My family was sheltered all over. Years after Iyad was killed, another brother spent years in jail. Another sister spent in jail. Palestinian, like anybody else, we deserve to live in peace. We deserve. Iyad deserves to be married, to go to college. Iyad deserves to have children he could not have. Okay? All I see every time I'm watching the news, mother and a sister like me losing their brother, their family member. Yes, he died 20 years in Ramadan 6, but he's like yesterday. Every time I watch what's going on in Jerusalem and Jenin and Nablus, tears and memory come. The day I open CNN and listen to NPR saying Israel just assassinated another Palestinian terrorist, Iyad Sawalha. He's a hero. He lived all his life to see his country free. So free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
بالروح بالدم نفديك يا فلسطين! بالروح بالدم نفديك يا فلسطين! بالروح بالدم نفديك يا فلسطين! Yes, yes, we need to talk to media. We need to talk to our politicians. Media, stop calling us terrorists. We're heroes. We're firefighters. We're freedom fighters. Sorry. I am from Nazareth, 1948. Became immigrant to Jenin, 1948. And now still, we're losing our home in Nazareth. We lost our home in Jenin. Where are we gonna go? Yes, they killed one Iyad, but we have another 3 Iyad in our family. 3 other Iyad in our family. And more to come. بالروح بالدم نفديك يا فلسطين. بالروح بالدم نفديك يا أقصى. بالروح بالدم نفديك يا أقصى. Please talk to media. Talk to radios. Talk to news. We deserve to live like everybody else. We deserve freedom. This is our land. These are our children. They're not terrorists. Thank you very much. Free, free Palestine!
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 Long live Palestine!
Long live Palestine!
From the river to the sea!
From the river to the sea!
Palestine will be free!
Palestine China will be free!
From the river to the sea!
When you recall your 16th year, horrid sound of helicopter gunships, the rumble of the tanks as they drew near, as the world went about its business, and I burned another tank of gasoline. The Dow Jones lost a couple points that day while you were crying in the city of Jenin. Did they even give your parents warning before they blew the windows out with shells, while you hid inside the high school basement amidst the ringing of church bells, as you watched your teacher crumple by the doorway, and in England they were toasting to the Queen? You were so far from the thoughts of so many, huddled in the city of Jenin. Were you thinking of the taunting of the soldiers, of the shit they smeared upon the walls? Were you thinking of your cousin after torture, or Tel Aviv and its glittering shopping malls? When the fat men in their mansions say that you don't want peace, did you wonder what they mean? As you sat amidst the stench inside the darkness, in the shattered city of Janine.
I am now catching up with you at the United Nations. We were in Bay Ridge the day before yesterday looking at the issue of marking the 75th anniversary of the Nakba. So tell me who you are and your thoughts and concerns as a Palestinian on this 75th catastrophe, the Nakba.
Yes, my name is Nardine Kiswani. I'm one of the founders of Within Our Lifetime United for Palestine, a community organization working to revitalize the revolutionary spirit of Palestinians in exile in pursuit of a free homeland. And on the occasion of Nakba, some people call it the 75th anniversary, but our understanding isn't that it just occurred 75 years ago, but that it's been ongoing for 75 years. Palestinians have been experiencing land theft, expulsion, genocide, occupation, apartheid, and so many different manifestations of Israeli settler colonization that wouldn't have been possible if it weren't for my grandparents being kicked off of their land and me as their, you know, descendant not even being able to return, not just to live there, but I can't even return to my homeland in Palestine because all borders are controlled by the Zionist entity or, you know, even in the case of Gaza, Egypt's Rafah border, it's still in cooperation with the Israeli state. So we are, you know, fighting for our right to return, fighting for our land to be liberated. There are over 10 million Palestinian refugees around the world that continue to languish in refugee camps of neighboring countries, that continue to be exiled in so many different places, and even Palestinians internally displaced within Palestine, like the Palestinians of Gaza, who are mostly refugees to begin with. And it's not just, you know, the issue of refugees, but also the constant bombardment of Gaza. Just this week, last week, we saw 33 Palestinians in Gaza be killed by Israeli bombs and airstrikes and countless more injured. So much damage to infrastructure, trauma to the children, destruction of institutions, and even just everyday things needed to survive, like power plants, like the water system, like so many things. 90% of Gaza's water is undrinkable. The UN, which we're in front of right now, said that Gaza would be unlivable by 2020, but clearly that doesn't really seem to do anything because nobody is stopping the ongoing siege and blockade of Gaza and so many other things that Palestinians are facing, like the occupation of Palestinians in the West Bank, the 50 discriminatory laws against Palestinians who are living inside what is now known as Israel, but what we call 48. So we're seeing mobilizations for Palestine around the world every year. Nakba marks, you know, not just what happened on May 15, 1948, which of course refers to the massacres. 531 Palestinian villages were depopulated. Over 750,000 Palestinians were expelled from their homeland. And like I said earlier, their descendants are still not allowed to return to this day. And Israel continues to steal more land and kill more Palestinians to expand its colonial project.
I wonder if you have a special message or thought on Shireen Akhla, who was, of course, a journalist who was deeply immersed in the struggle of the Palestinian people and was killed by the Israeli Defense Forces, and a recent martyr who starved himself to death. So lift up the martyrs.
Yeah, Shireen Abu Akhla, we're, you know, just a few days past the anniversary of her murder about a year ago by the Israeli authorities. She was wearing a press vest, of course, and a helmet when she was covering a raid on Jenin when the Israeli army snipers pointed very precisely to her forehead and took her out because she's so prominent in exposing Israeli atrocities and shedding a light on, you know, what Palestinians are going through every day. She was world-renowned for her coverage She's a voice that I've heard in my living room since I was a child. You know, just my parents watching the news, watching Al Jazeera. And she was an American citizen, too. Not that that should make her life more valuable, because all Palestinians' lives are valuable. But as an American citizen, it just goes to show how much Israel gets away with doing these things, all the impunity that they enjoy from the United States, from the United Nations, that they're able to even kill American citizens. And everyone's working to cover it. And not only did they murder her in cold blood, they attacked her funeral. And of course, this is an ongoing reality for Palestinians. Another Palestinian leader, Khadr Adnan, who was a Palestinian resistance leader, was on hunger strike because he had been arrested repeatedly, jailed repeatedly, and he was fighting for his freedom. And of course, due to their medical neglect and not respecting the hunger strike, Israel essentially killed him by allowing him to continuing to imprison him, knowing that he's on hunger strike. And this is something that many Palestinians have done for years, is go on hunger strikes to fight for their freedom. And many Palestinian prisoners have been able to secure their freedom that way. But, you know, now we're seeing people just ignore Palestinians who are on hunger strike, ignore the plight of Palestinians. So we're here in front of the United Nations hoping to send a message. You know, you can't say that you didn't know, and we all have a responsibility. And not just as institutions, but as individuals from wherever we may be, to resist Israeli occupation, genocide, and colonization of Palestinians and Palestinian land by any means necessary, from wherever we are with whatever we have.
And one of the other things that seems to be confusing, maybe because there's a willingness to be confused by people here from the Jewish community, i.e. that there is a democracy movement in Israel now in response to the greater aggressivity, if one can even say that, of the settler regime, the Netanyahu and the entire administration. How do you view what's actually been happening in terms of the protests, which certainly have not raised a single issue relevant to the Palestinian people? But your thoughts?
A settler colony can never be a democracy, so this is not a thought that I ever entertained. I know there's theories going around that it's a so-called color revolution as well. And, you know, I think essentially this is some Israeli citizens' attempts to give a facelift to the occupation and make it seem like, you know, they also have their struggles and, you know, there's this movement going on there. But of course we know that there is no concern for the Palestinian people. There is no movement within the so-called democracy movement that is fighting for decolonization of Palestinian land, for Palestinian return, for Palestinian rights. And so I think, you know, anyone who has called themselves an Israeli that wants to be in solidarity with Palestine must support Palestinian return and Palestinian resistance. And we don't see that at all from them.
Do you see any correlation between settler colonialism in Palestine, on Palestinian land, by the Israeli Zionist administration and the issues of racism and genocide that have been perpetrated here against indigenous people and so on?
Of course, the U.S., Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Israel are all settler colonies. South Africa, former settler colony, still has remnants of that. I do think it's important for us to draw these connections and to express solidarity with indigenous people all over the world. And, you know, some people ask, why does the U.S. support Israel when they, you know, commit all these crimes? And a simple phrase I like to use in response to that is that it's settler colonial solidarity, that the U.S. Is invested in Israel's existence. Biden said it himself, if Israel didn't exist, we would create one, because it essentially functions as a U.S. military base to protect U.S. interests in the Middle East. And, you know, we know that imperialism is the highest stage of capitalism, and colonization is also connected in a manifestation of that as well. So what we're seeing happening in Palestine is not a surprise, and it's ultimately funded, supported, and propped up by the U.S., who's one of the P5 members of the United Nations, vetoing any resolutions against Israel, giving over $10 million of U.S. tax dollars every single day just to the military alone in Israel, that ends up as the bullets in the chest of Palestinian children, essentially, that we're all funding. So, you know, I think it's important to not only call out what the U.S. is currently and actively doing, but the entire history that led to this moment, and racism and coups and imperialism and genocide that they've committed, not just on this soil to indigenous people, but also to the African people who were enslaved and brought here on slave ships, which was also a form of genocide, and the interfering that the U.S. does around the world that leads to dictators being propped up and millions of people being killed, the wars that they continue to perpetrate in Iraq, Afghanistan, so many, you know, places all over the world.
And the organization you work with?
Within Our Lifetime, United for Palestine.
Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Every inch of Palestine.
Every inch of Palestine.
Will be decolonized.
Will be decolonized.
Ongoing neck back.
Ongoing neck back.
Free, free Palestine.
Palestine.
Free, free, free Palestine.
Free, free, free Palestine.
From the river to the sea.
From the river to the sea.
Palestine will be free.
Palestine will be free.
Israel, you can't hide.
Israel, you can't hide.
We charge you with genocide.
We charge you with genocide.
Israel, what do you say?
Israel, what do you say?
How many kids did you kill today?
How many kids did you kill today?
Assalamu alaikum, ya jama'at al khair. Just like to start off by saying that as a hip-hop artist and as an Arab, I understand the importance of poetry, and Mr. Galloway, your rhetorical skill has been quite an inspiration for all of us, so thank you. This I wrote on New Year's Eve while watching a lot of friends party it up, so without further ado. And by the way, this is for you, this is not to you. لك ايه كل سنة وانتو سالمين يا جماعة الخير ما بتستحوا على حالكم مو سالين 1300 شخص قاتلين بس بتضلوا ساكتين كأنه فلسطين ما الهاش قيمة. Since most of you just don't know what that means. Suppose it's no surprise you ain't recognize the screams. Gaza blown to smithereens, stray dogs feeding on the flesh of rotten corpses. While a child cries, dreams shattered, dark eyes gleaming, scattered shards hide, flee the scene. Borders coming down like a guillotine. We're picking up steam, protesting with music in between the bomb blast, them bombastic fascists scheming to drop faster. They learned it from their masters. Then they went and made it worse by blowing up the caskets and babies in the baskets. And it ain't no way to ask if casualties are innocent when the press don't get it passed. Just don't use illegal gases. Is that too much to ask? Maybe then we could ID some of these bodies in the bags. I know it's gotta be a drag to get hit with a couple rockets, but collective punishment is really never gonna stop. It's time to make a New Year's resolution to not commit a war crime. And keep ignoring all kinds of UN resolutions. Look, that's if you speak the truth when you're saying you intend to find a peaceful solution while you keep up the shooting. Ain't no equal to you in an open-air prison where the hopeless bear living and you're choking little children with that rope that you were given from imperial false hopes of ending terrorism. The irony is you really didn't. Thank you.
You're listening to a special from Equal Rights and Justice for a free, free Palestine. Almost 30 years ago, John Pilger, an extraordinary Australian journalist, internationally renowned, made a documentary about Palestine. It was called Palestine is Still the Issue. Well, he's made another one. And it's called Palestine is Still the Issue. His point is, in the course of a generation, a great injustice remains unchanged and urgent. In his first film, he described the flight and expulsion of almost a million Palestinians who became refugees in their own land at the creation of the State of Israel in 1948. Then, as a result of the Six-Day War in 1967, What has changed? Asked Pilger. What has changed is that the Palestinians have fought back. Stateless and humiliated for so long, they have risen up against Israel's huge military regime. Although they have no army, no tanks, no American planes and gunships or missiles, for them the overriding routine of terror day after day has been the ruthless control of almost every aspect of their lives as they live in an open prison. The Palestinian struggle for their land is the theme of our programming. And it is the theme of the films that we want to give to you as tools to educate, agitate, and organize to empower the Palestinian people with our support. Because justice and injustice anywhere must be part of our cry for justice. May 15th, 1948 marks one of the most violent acts of the 20th century, al-Nakba, the catastrophe. With the support of the British, over 750,000, some people say 800,000, but Palestinians were exiled, and over 500 Palestinian villages and towns were depopulated by Zionist militias, Zionist colonial forces who stole large swaths of land and attempted to eradicate any trace of Palestinian life and claim the land as their own. Free, free Palestine. For those of you who are internationalists, for those of you who are humanists, for those of you who cannot stand and countenance injustice, this is the opportunity for us to do what no other media does. None. WBAI is exemplary, is extraordinary, and what should be ordinary, which is speaking truth to unjust power and for a free, free Palestine. And we know you want to become more involved. And the question is, how do we do that? What a difficult issue. Shouldn't be, but it is, and most decidedly in New York, to agitate and educate and organize to support a free, free Palestine. Now, 75 years after Nakba, 75 years of resistance for a Palestinian return, a Palestinian takeover from the river to the sea. And we'll give ample consideration to what should be more and more the question whether there should be a one-state solution. Well, how are you going to educate, agitate, and organize for Palestinian life, for Palestinian self-determination? Well, I would suggest that you can begin by getting the outstanding box set of international films, because most of these couldn't and weren't made in the U.S. or by U.S. producers, because there's too much in the U.S. media and too much politicizing that tries to expunge, bury, obscure, silence the Palestinian voice. So we went abroad and we put together 10 full feature-length films that tell the story of 75 years of catastrophe for the Palestinian people and 75 years of resistance. So you can, when you call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, you can get The Occupation of the American Mind, which looks at Israel's public relations war in the U.S., its ongoing military occupation of Palestinian territory, and its repeated invasions of the Gaza Strip, which have triggered a fierce backlash against Israeli policies virtually everywhere in the world except the United States. Well, Occupation of the American Mind takes us on an eye-opening look at this critical exception, zeroing in on pro-Palestinian public relations efforts within the United States. That is just one of the films. And then there's the issue of understanding how the government of Israel functions itself. And there's the roadmap to apartheid. The roadmap to apartheid is such a powerful and compelling film. The visuals are just staggering. The house demolitions are appalling. Religion is repeatedly misused by politicians. Yet one of the lessons of the Jewish history is that God, if you will, is always on the side of the oppressed. I think that's material, and I think that's a metaphysical reality, if you will. Another is that those who dehumanize others, dehumanize themselves. Well, Roadmap to Apartheid, you will see how the Israelis will indeed pay a heavy price and do for their callous mistreatment of Palestinians. And similarly to South Africa, how they have established an apartheid system to control, to dehumanize, to ultimately erase the Palestinian people, Palestinian culture from the land, as well as to expropriate in its entirety the land through their settlements, which are increasing exponentially. A harrowing expose of Israel's unique system of official discrimination, Roadmap to Apartheid, Peace, Propaganda, and the Promised Land, Occupation of the American Mind. Again, those do deal very specifically with U.S. media and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The Iron Wall, which talks about the physicality, the material way in which apartheid has been implemented. It is one of the best descriptions of the barrier of the wall that's been built. Its routing and impact is shown in the film, The Iron Wall. It is wondrous. In the worst sense, to look at this wall and the way the Israeli-Palestinian complex, how complex it's become, and these films which really demystify and debunk the mythologies that we have been taught, and look at Zionist colonization. So there's The Iron Wall, there's Peace Propaganda and the Promised Land, there's Roadmap to Apartheid, there's the Occupation of the American Mind, there's the people, a people without a land, an absolute staggering beginnings of a discussion now, which is having more and more prevalence, exploring the notion that the only real solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is a one-state solution. Settlement expansion across Palestinian is out of control, out of Palestine. It's out of control. Now we need to speak about the one-state solution. Is the patchwork of remaining Palestinian land now so fragmented that it could never even be a viable future state? one of the other extraordinarily important films by one of the greatest intellectual activists of our times who we lost was Edward Said. And I want to give you as well, with this compilation of 10 full feature-length films, the myth of the clash of civilizations, an ideal introduction to the work of one of the century's leading cultural analysts, and a debunking of the mythology which has been so prevalent of the way in which world power, world culture is broken down, which sets up an inherent antagonism and hegemonistic and supremacist conception of who gets to control. And make no mistake about it, Zionism is a form of settler colonialism, and the guiding ideology is one of supremacy, similar to what existed in South Africa, similar to what existed in Australia, and most decidedly similar to the way in which the United States has grown, a settler colonialist country. There's so much to learn, and there's so much to relate to. I want to return now quickly to the clips, the montage that I've put together, which are from these 10 full feature-length films. The Occupation of the American Mind, The Clash of Civilizations, Occupation 101, Peace, Propaganda, and the Promised Land, A People Without a Land. Oh, there's so much more. Do trust me. Do believe me. This is a full education. And as I started to talk about, the films of John Pilger, Palestine is still the issue. Palestine is still the issue. The Palestinian struggle for the land is the theme of our programming. It's the theme of the films we're offering you to continue your education and for us then to use these to educate others. The loss of 78% of the land in 1948 meant that they could claim only the remaining 22%, which was occupied by Israel. The Palestinians fought mainly with slingshots against tanks and planes during their first uprising, the 1987 Intifada, and rose again and again. The curfews, the controls, the roadblocks, the checkpoints governing their lives bear comparison with apartheid South Africa, with the U.S. as a settler colonialist state. Do go to your phone. I haven't said this enough. I haven't given you the number enough. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. And ask for and say it like you mean it. Free, free Palestine. That's what we're calling this box set of 10 full feature-length films, almost all of which have been made abroad and are available no place else. They are not available, sad to say, because I wish they were, commercially. Some from listening to the brilliant, brilliant intellectual talk about the world order, and critique the myth of the clash of civilizations, the dominant ideology and way we look at the world. Edward Said, you'll get that film, A People Without a Land, which looks at the one-state solution, The Road to Apartheid, which articulates and depicts how the government is structured to control a people and has created virtual Bantustans, which even now it is reclaiming for the settlers. 212-209-2950, Peace, Propaganda, and the Promised Land, The Iron Wall, The Occupation of the American Mind, Occupation 101, the two-disc set, one of the most remarkable anti-war, anti-colonialist films that has ever been made. All for you when you call 212-209-2950. And for this priceless package of intellectual and artistic information and tools to organize with for a free, free Palestine, we are asking for a $150 pledge, just a $150 pledge, which will go to supporting WBAI so that we can continue to bring you this kind of programming and so that we don't have to continue to live with the injustice that our government perpetrates in support of Israeli Zionist control for 75 years over the Palestinian people and the maintenance of the largest open-air prison in the world, and that is Gaza. The Palestinian people have been steadfast in resisting eradication. Armed struggle against Zionism by Palestinians and people across the Arab world had been an anchor of anti-colonial politics for years before 1948. The Nakba really didn't just start in 1948. The Nakba only advanced the commitment of revolutionaries to stand up against Zionist colonialism and its imperialist European origins. And these films give you the tools to continue to fight this injustice and say, not in our name, not in our name. 212-209-2950. Free, free Palestine. $150. Why, it's an absolute, absolute privilege to be able to play this material and to know that WBAI Radio, and it has for 63 years and counting, brings you this material. And against the strains of the Palestinian musician Simon Shahin, we return to our programming as you continue to do what you've been doing for the entire last half hour. And that is calling, pledging $150, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. While the films last, because we do not have an endless supply, all of them were donated by their extraordinary artists, filmmakers. And we are about to check in with another extraordinary activist, theoretician, filmmaker, and that is Max Blumenthal and Dan Cohn, who are going to be looking at the killing of Gaza. Two of the only American journalists that wanted to did get into Gaza and tell it like it is. 212-209-2950. Please call, ask for a free, free Palestine, $150. Support the station, support yourself, support truth and justice. Don't stand on the sideline. Use these films. That's what they're intended for, to propagate the issues for a free, free Palestine.
I really want to understand the background and the politics that prompted both of you to use cinematography as a way of telling the story of this strip that is 6 miles wide and 27 miles long, has 2 million people enclosed in what is oftentimes described as the largest open-air prison in the world.
Dan Cohen and I would both define ourselves as anti-Zionist Jews. We both grew up in very Zionist communities. I grew up in Washington, D.C. My family I would describe as non-Zionist, and they've always encouraged me to question everything, so they didn't really have a problem to my emerging politics, and I think I was going where more progressive-minded American Jews was going, and Dan as well, and it led me as a journalist to start deciding to use my privilege as a Jew to gain access to the land of Israel-Palestine and present the real Israel that Americans didn't know and help start this process of education so we could have a debate in the U.S. And that's why I produced the book Goliath. It was 5 years in the making. And, you know, I thought that I had kind of succeeded enough with that book that I could maybe move on to other topics. And then the Israeli assault on the Gaza Strip took place. I managed to get into Gaza along with Dan. Dan had been living in the Aida refugee camp or near it in the West Bank, and we connected and went in there not knowing totally what to expect. And we wound up a few hours after getting credentialed in the rubble, the destroyed eastern border area of Shejaiya, which had been blanketed by Israeli artillery, talking to the stunned survivors of this attack and the ruins of their homes. Dan just had a small camera and one mic, and we decided to just keep going.
Palestinians.
More than 1,650.
More than 1,800.
More than 1,900.
2,000 Palestinians.
More than 2,100 Palestinians dead.
This is a humanitarian catastrophe, of that there is no doubt. Almost 2,500 dead.
We began filming this documentary on August 15th, 2014. Israel and the armed factions of the besieged Gaza Strip had been fighting for weeks. When a five-day ceasefire was declared, journalist Dan Cohen and I entered Gaza for the first time. We headed straight for the Shejaiya neighborhood, where the most ferocious fighting had taken place. This is the street-level view from Shejaiya, the area east of Gaza City that extends all the way to the Israeli border. Block after block of ruin, multi-level family homes flattened by Israeli artillery and missiles. By nightfall, open fires are the only source of light here. And when we visited, bodies were still being exhumed from the rubble. Much of this destruction took place in the course of a few hours on July 23rd, when the invading Israeli forces found themselves under ferocious fire from local resistance forces, enduring unexpectedly heavy casualties. As the Israeli infantry fled in full retreat, they called in an artillery and air assault, killing at least 120 Palestinian civilians and obliterating thousands of homes. The killing of Gaza. These are the scenes of Shejaiya's residents as they fled Israel's bombardment to the relative safety of Gaza City. Most would return to ruins, to shells of homes, with nothing but whatever they were able to carry on their backs. Driven decades ago from their land in what is now Israel, they had become refugees all over again. Not everyone was able to escape the Israeli invasion of Shejaiya. Some, like Nasser Shamali, remained trapped in their homes, and as they tried to escape, they were hunted. The The Israeli army executes innocent people. That's what Hisham Shamali told us, and he should know. Several members of his family were killed execution style, including his cousin, Salem. 23-year-old Salem Shamali led a group of volunteers from the International Solidarity Movement into the rubble of Shujaiya on a search for his cousin, who had been wounded and was in need of rescue. One of those international volunteers, Joe Katrin, explained to us what happened next.
On the offensive's 14th day, July 20th, 2014, four other activists and I went to the Shujaiya neighborhood, which Israel had bombed for days, to accompany rescue teams through the rubble during a two-hour ceasefire. A young Palestinian, whose name we would later learn was Salem Shamali, asked us to go with him to his house, where he hoped to find his family. It sounds ridiculous now, but at the time, we thought the ceasefire would make it safe.
The house we are going to check is not the house, the house after it.
Okay.
Yes?
Are we
going to
make it?
Inshallah.
Inshallah.
As we crossed an alley with a clear line of sight to Israeli positions by the separation barrier, a gunshot from their direction struck the ground between us. We scattered into two groups, sheltered behind buildings on either side. After a pause, Salem stepped into the alley, hoping to lead his group to our side, but was struck by another bullet and fell to the ground. As he lay on his back, two more rounds hit him and he stopped moving.
Allah, hey, ya Allah, alhamdulillah, ya Rabbi, hey, is it,
the gunfire kept us from reaching him. When Israeli artillery began flying overhead and striking the buildings behind us, we were forced to retreat, leaving him. We only learned his name 2 days later when his mother, father, sister, and cousin recognized him in a video I had tweeted of his killing.
One of the most enduring scenes from the assault on the Gaza Strip in 2014 was the video of 22-year-old Salem Shamali being executed by an Israeli sniper in the rubble of Shujaiya. And we went back to meet with his family, actually during the war, the Shamali family. And we met his younger brother, Wasim, and he broke down in tears describing how much he missed his older brother. And, you know, after our interview, I spoke to Wasim in the corner of the room, and he told me that when he grew up, he wanted to be a resistance fighter. And this is the story that we heard from so many young people who've known nothing but siege and these devastating assaults and the brutality of occupation. Dan, you had the chance to go out with the Nasser Saladin Brigades, which is an armed faction in the Gaza Strip, and film them training.
I sat and talked with these young men who have decided to take up arms against Israel, against the occupation. I asked each one of them individually what motivates you, and each one would tell me occupation, and many of them have individual traumas, whether they've lost family members or they've seen massive violence.
We encountered people who were resisting in so many different ways under siege. We encountered young painters, rappers, break dancers. What they're doing through their art is a form of resistance. We also told the story of Rifat Al-Arir, who is a teacher of English literature at Islamic University, and we showed how he's teaching a classroom full of young women in the Gaza Strip who've never been able to meet Israelis about Israeli society, about Hebrew literature, and about the Jewish Israelis who are resisting occupation and apartheid, people that they'll never have a chance to meet. And so we think these stories are absolutely essential to tell. We're working with a team of translators, editors, we're even working with an animator who is helping to illustrate some of the atrocities and stories of survival described to us by the survivors of Israel's assault. And we're working with a composer to produce an original soundtrack that really conveys the experience that's being described to us on film.
On the days of October 9th and 10th, 2015, hundreds of youth gathered at the buffer zone between Israel and Gaza. For the Israeli military, this is a free fire area. According to its policy, anyone approaching within 300 meters of the fence can be shot on sight. The demonstrators came without the approval of local authorities, without weapons or armor, with nothing more than the will to confront their besieger face to face. For 2 days straight, the demonstrators waved Palestinian flags and sent volleys of rocks at the soldiers enforcing the occupation of Gaza. With a seemingly endless supply of tear gas and a hail of live bullets, the Israeli army tried to drive them back from the buffer zone. Some 145 youth were wounded in the protests.
أنا اليوم تعرض اثنين أصدقائي إلى إصابة أحدهم في رجله والآخر في يده ولكن إحنا اليوم رغم إنه أصدقائي صابوا وذهبوا إلى المشفى إلا إنه نحن هنا موجودين لكي.
Seven others never returned home.
يطلق النار بشكل قاتل
For 2 days, the youth of Gaza put their bodies on the line to shake their cage, to pound on the heavy gates of Gaza. But with the war over and the world's attention focused elsewhere, they were left to wonder if anyone was listening.
Please share what you see and what you hear. The world should know what happened exactly in Gaza. The world should know. We are under attack.
You ask me how it is that I dare to take a side. You see, I loathe myself pointing out you have lied. You say it's tribal warfare, but I disagree, for the dynamics of the situation are not difficult to see. On the one side is the fighter jet, on the other is the stone. On the one side is the slave, on the other is the throne. For the many there are checkpoints, while foreign soldiers rule the streets. For the one side there is victory, but the people don't accept defeat. The word you need to know is occupation, the very definition of a land without a nation. And if peace is what you're after, then let us not deceive. It'll come on the day the tanks return to Tel Aviv. On the one side there is hunger and bulldozed olive trees. On the other is the army, by decrees, caterpillars maul the streets, destroy whole city blocks, while children swallow shrapnel for the crime of throwing rocks. Fences are erected around the towns they flatten, and Herzl's fanatics sweep on sheets of satin, and they water their plantations, drilling ever deeper wells, while the displaced children of the hopeless are filled with bullet shells. The word you need to know is occupation, the very definition of a land without a nation. And if peace is what you're after, then let us not deceive. It'll come on the day the settlers return to Tel Aviv.
David Robeck's The World Should Know, Occupation. You were listening to the killing of Gaza. Independent journalists Max Blumenthal and Dan Cohn documented Israel's 2014 assault on Gaza during the war and chronicled its horrific aftermath as they waded through the rubble of Gaza's destroyed border regions. They turned a camera onto the survivors of the slaughter and let them speak for themselves. While Dan returned week after week to capture on film the daily struggles of the people of Gaza as they suffered through one of the worst winters in recorded history and then weathered the sweltering summer heat without electricity and in many cases without homes. While giving voice to the pain of a people under siege, Cohn and Blumenthal also highlighted Gazans' inspiring acts of creative resistance, from painting to breakdancing to literature, that allows them to maintain their humanity in the face of deprivation and war. Killing Gaza is much more than a documentary, as are all the films we're making available to you about Palestinian resilience and suffering. They are both chilling visual documents of war crimes committed by the Israeli military, featuring direct testimony and evidence from the survivors delivered to them often just days before escaping indiscriminate shelling, bombings, and summary execution. These films, Free Free Palestine, are all about the acts of documentary filmmaking, the different layers of reality which emerge in these films into a moralizing and a heart-wrenching call to action. These documentaries immerse you, the viewer, when you get them, when you watch them, when you use them with others to educate, agitate, and organize into a complex, dense truth that one cannot simply choose to look away from or wander off onto the next most important subject. In the age of catchphrase articles and minute-long news reports, films like The Killing Gaza calls for us to take the time to conscientiously inform ourselves on current issues in a deeper and more diligent way. So I just want to take another moment during our spring fund drive to ask you to do what Dan Cohn and Max Blumenthal and all the other people that we've been playing have been asking you to do, and that is to not turn away, not allow our thoughts to be dominated by catchphrase articles and minute-long news reports, but to seriously and honestly look at 75 years of Nakba, the Arabic word for catastrophe, since 1948, the killing of the Palestinian people, the efforts to eradicate, erase, expunge, remove from the land all that is Palestine. And The Killing of Gaza is one of the films that again takes us to the time to conscientiously inform ourselves and then to inform others. So use these films that we want to give to you for your contribution of $150 to continue the education process, to absolutely, in the best sense, moralize, because it is an issue of morality. and change the world ethic or the U.S. war ethic in its support of Israel, to cleanse from the land a people who have lived there and farmed and worked it for generations. And I might say, did so in conjunction with multiple different groups of people. The issue is a free, free Palestine. Please call 212-209-2950 and offer your support, a $150 pledge, to keep this station keeping on, so that we can talk about how much military aid does the U.S. give to Israel. Why, the nation promised $3.8 billion to aid Israel in 2019 alone. All but 2%, and that's even the greater issue, all but 2% was for the military, right? And as this was part of a 10-year, $38 billion memorandum of understanding, which was signed initially in 2016. It was the third agreement of its kind, followed by two others signed by George W. Bush and the Clinton administration. And the agreement supports updating the Israeli aircraft fleet and maintaining the country's missile defense system. The deal provides $500 million in missile defense funding and $3.3 billion in other military funding per year from 2019 to 2028. An internationalist, a humanist, a striver for peace and justice, for equal rights and justice, for a free, free Palestine, then these films are essential watches. Use them as tools. Use them to educate and agitate others. What? Faith-based organizations? School organizations? Film clubs that you can form? Block associations, social studies clubs within the schools. Take these films, Roadmap to Apartheid, The Killing Gaza, The War Around Us, Occupation 101, The Clash of Civilizations, Edward Said's, The Occupation of the American Mind, Israel's Public Relations War in the U.S., The Iron Wall, the film about the development and building of the apartheid-style, Bantustan-type wall that separates Israel from and controls and keeps as really a open-air prison the remaining areas occupied primarily by Palestinians, those that are not being taken no matter what by the voracious and aggressive Zionist settlers who would claim all and eradicate the entire identity and reality of the Palestinian people from the land. Well, the documentary warns us, they all do, about a continuous and viable Palestinian state which is becoming no longer possible, and that the chances for a peaceful resolution of the conflict are slipping away if the current situation continues. Free, free Palestine. Peace, Propaganda, and the Promised Land, the film that looks at concertedly the U.S. media and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Well, I'm not even going to name all of them, but trust me when I say that they are just, yes, they are from the Palestinian perspective. But that perspective is one of truth and justice and honesty and anti-imperialism and fighting against hegemony and the use of Israel as a surrogate for our hegemonist efforts in the Middle East and across the planet. We, that is the U.S. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. We're going to return your pledge of $150 while this box set of 10 full feature-length films continues. We have a number remaining. Would that they were all gone, but at the same time, I want to make sure that we have enough for all of you. Oh, we'll make sure we get them. We'll go back to the filmmakers and ask them to give us more if you exceed the numbers that we already have. And you've been doing great this morning. Keep on calling 212-209-2950. Ask for Free Palestine. You will get as a thank you gift, but more as an organizing tool to educate and uplift yourself with the information and as tools to mobilize others. Just as, you know, Max Blumenthal and Dan Cohn were saying, that, you know, the act of documentary filmmaking, the different layers of reality that emerge in their films, which are both heart-wrenching, but they were call to action. They are great ways of stimulating and immersing people in the struggle for a free, free Palestine. 212-209-2950. I'm Mimi Rosenberg, and you're listening to Equal Rights and Justice and Free, Free Palestine. And we return now with a montage of material that I have extracted and put together as sound files to make this program, Free, Free Palestine, and to give you an idea of the searing content, the critical intellectual departures from supremacist and settler colonialist ideology that all of these films bring to you. You will, by the way, not only be further inspired to work towards a free, free Palestine, but you will understand even better what we still have is the challenges here, the issues of settler colonialism and its perversion and its corruption on the entire body politic. And it serves as the ideological and actual and economic base for a system that can tolerate the genocide of the indigenous people, that could tolerate and build off and create a system of plantation capitalism off of the slave system. All of these films have direct and immediate applicability to the struggle that is still here to root out, to pull out the poisonous roots and branch and poisonous fruit of settler colonialism that provides the bias, the supremacist ideology that is the foundation of the growth and advent now of and the rise of fascism in this country. So much to learn from these films and the struggle to free, free Palestine. 212-209-2950. Let's return to our stunning sound clips from the even more stunning actual films for a free, free Palestine.
You simply can't put a number on the number of families whose lives have been ruined by this war. But the most important situation on the ground is that Gaza has been put further into desperation.
The situation here is is horrific for everybody.
The munition being dropped on the area of Djibouti that is consistent living as white phosphorus-like phosphorus.
As the darkness came, the missiles continued to be fired. And then the heavy machinery started to move, and it's just moved in to phase two.
When I arrived into Gaza in the spring of 2008, foreign journalists had all pulled out of Gaza. I was kind of saying to myself, what the hell am I doing, like walking into Gaza as someone with an American passport? I approached it with the mindset of like, okay, just get through these next 12 months, take it one day at a time, live your life with the mindset that you're a foreign journalist coming to work in Gaza. When I arrived into Gaza, Gaza had already been under siege.
There is still a shortage of fuel because of the sanctions Israel has imposed.
The Israeli siege on Gaza is essentially a stranglehold on the territory. Israel controls all of the access points into the Gaza Strip with the exception of one border that Egypt shares with Gaza.
For every Palestinian that makes their way across the border into Egypt, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of Palestinians desperately trying to get across, each with their own compelling reasons.
November of 2008, and it was just around the time of the US presidential elections. And so we were very much interested in just getting a sense of the global reaction, especially in a place like Gaza where US foreign policy is, you know, tangibly felt. So at the time, we were hoping to do an interview with the deposed Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh, and what we needed was a second correspondent to help us gauge the public reaction.
So I entered Gaza on the 4th of November, and as my bureau chief was saying goodbye to me, he said to me, it's only 24 hours, have a nice fish meal in Gaza, come back out, and we'll have a really nice meal in Jerusalem. I'll never forget that phrase.
So when Shireen came in from the outside, I had a very specific vision in terms of what Gaza was going through and what needed to be communicated about the suffering of the people and what needed to be communicated about what was happening in the ground.
Before then, we were very good friends, like brother and sister, but we hadn't worked together.
Well, as Americans were voting, Israeli bombs were falling on Gaza. A deadly strike threatens the ceasefire.
We realized immediately that while the world was consumed with what was happening in the U.S., there was a secondary story that was unfolding in Gaza.
That attack killed four Palestinian fighters. By mid-afternoon, Hamas responded with the Grad rockets.
This was a monumental shift. The ceasefire had completely collapsed. We felt that Gaza and the armed factions and Israel now were on a collision course. And this is why Shireen, who had come in just for a few days, had found herself now in 1 week, 2 weeks, several weeks, a month, and there was so much work to be done.
For the first month I was there, it was just seeing so many people living in this hopeless state. 18-year-old who's really excited about going to university. What do you say to him when you know that once he finishes university, he probably won't be able to work or go anywhere else to work? Life stands still. They can't see a future.
When Naveen's university emailed and asked her to explain why she would not be able to enroll for the upcoming fall semester, she replied, I'm living under siege. So the university decided to revoke her scholarship, admission status, and her visa to the United States.
Emotionally, it took a huge toll on me because I'd never been around something so hopeless before.
So many of the things that we were experiencing professionally and personally were just taking their toll on us. My relationship with Shireen was very, at the time, very, very tense.
I'd already been there a lot longer than I thought I was going to be, and I was desperate at that point to go home.
It was a beautiful Saturday morning.
Ayman and I were in a coffee shop just near Palestine Square, and it was a coffee shop that we'd been to before.
We figured, oh, it's Saturday, it's the Sabbath. It was unlikely that anything was going to happen on the Israeli side. Usually the government takes that day off. You weren't going to get any major statements or any kind of major reactions from the Israeli government. And in Gaza, it was, you know, the weekend while we were sitting there in that coffee shop.
When we heard the first blast, everyone in the coffee shop just stopped and looked around them, but there was no huge reaction. And one of the waiters came and said, "Don't worry, it's a sonic boom, nothing big, everyone go back to normal."
And then we heard another loud explosion.
So I go to the window and I look and I see smoke and people running past our building.
People had seen the cloud of smoke rising from nearby buildings at police stations. So we knew something happened.
And it was completely robotic. It was pay the check, go downstairs, get into the car, and go to the office. Nothing much said. He called Doha at that time. He was completely professional. I, on the other hand, was in a bit of shock. And I really wasn't thinking very much about work. I was thinking about getting myself out of there and what's the safest option and where is everyone else.
Reports of Israeli airstrikes on the Gaza Strip.
About 15 minutes ago, a series of explosions were heard across Gaza City. The communications network seems to be down, so gathering information has been very difficult. On our way here, we were able to see some of that destruction. We've seen some casualties being evacuated. Timing, though, perhaps should come as a surprise. Saturday morning, both the crossings are generally closed because of being the Sabbath.
I was scared as hell. I was frightened.
I'd never heard a blast. I'd never seen a missile strike. I didn't understand what was happening, and I was terrified. I was terrified.
And I remember doing that first live shot where I was just looking all around Gaza City, and I could just see column after column after column of black smoke rising.
Clearly, the Israeli military operation still taking place. Death toll stands at 120.
I can't remember, you know, 5 minutes without the sound of an explosion happening on that first day.
There are bodies in the streets. How many is not known. 30 missiles have slammed into the enclave.
The number of dead in Gaza are at 197 after a series of Israeli airstrikes.
There was another airstrike. Can you guys see that? Do you guys see that strike? Hello? Aday, can you hear me?
The intensity with which the bombardment started made us think, surely this isn't going to go on for more than a day.
They were telling us, you know, this is the most number of Palestinians ever to die in a single day. And we started questioning, is that really true? And to imagine that that kind of damage was going to be repeated and only intensified. And not only could you not unleash that kind of damage, but you could never do it while the world stood silent and did nothing about it.
I don't think either of us realize that this is the beginning of a war.
You know, when that first day happened, we knew that there were no major international organizations in Gaza. Shireen and I had become the only major outlet for the world to see what was happening inside Gaza.
هذا الفشل الفشل سيبه.
It was the single bloodiest day in Palestinian history since, you know, 1948.
We decided on the first night the best place to report from, to go live from, was the main Shifa hospital.
The second we walked into the hospital, the smell of blood, the smell of fear, the smell of the bodies that had been brought there.
I saw kids, I saw young men, and when I asked them what they did, what they, where they lived, they were civilians.
It was just intense chaos. And we did a live shot that very first night. We're actually standing in the orthopedic section of the hospital because it was made into a makeshift emergency intensive care unit. And I'm going to take you in here and have to warn you, though, that the pictures may be a bit disturbing. But these are some of the cases that are being treated. This woman right here, 55-year-old Fatma, a charity worker. She was working in a building that was adjacent to one of the buildings that was struck. But I have to again emphasize that the place we are standing is not an emergency care facility, nor is it an intensive care or special care unit. This is a makeshift room. All of these appliances that are being put to use here have been put really at on an ad hoc base relatively quickly as the cases were bringing in. Here is another student that is being treated. Now, most of these cases, we are told from the doctors here, are suffering from severe head fractures. They are in a state of coma right now. Their status is still a bit unclear. Now, I'm joined by Dr. Hassan Khalif, the Director General of the Shifa Hospital. Doctor, thank you very much for joining us. I want to start off by asking you, what is the situation at Shifa Hospital now with the amount of cases that have been brought in today?
Well, today is what the desperate day. Really, it is the desperate situation. You know, more than 210 cases arrived within 15 minutes of the.
The fact that you could see these people lying there bleeding, and the doctors were telling us that they're running out of blood. There wasn't enough bandage and gauze to cover people. So they were starting to cut up the blankets and the sheets and tie people up in them.
And when the war began, it's not like Israel opened its borders to allow civilians to flee the fighting. It's not like Egypt opened its border to allow civilians to flee the fighting. But never have I found myself in a situation where the war is all around me.
Flash of white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames, and nothing remains. Just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Women and children alike, murdered and massacred night after night. While the so-called leaders of countries afar debated on who's wrong or right. But their powerless words were in vain, and the bombs fell down like acid rain. Through the tears and the blood and the pain, you can still hear that voice through the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight.
We have Omar Jaber from Al Auda. Let's welcome him. So now, let's get some poetry.
Sometimes I lose patience, lost in space in this sea of restless faces that amazes me. In 1948, millions of Jews relocate Palestinians by war, while political communities change colors like monthly comic book covers. But misplaced hate causes moral distaste, so I'm writing with rage as a way to keep pace, as a way to keep faith, because previous mistakes are hard to erase, so I find myself chasing my own imagination. And they call this negotiation. Say our methods are terrorists, that we talk to innocents, when the truth is, they do. The only difference is their blockades take longer. Starvation without representation, Israeli negotiation kills daily. And while they carry their wounded on stretchers and wheelchairs and take them to hospitals to receive quality health care, we cradle bleeding children miles before we find a paved road. Our ambulance is forced to swerve through dirt covered in bullet holes while Israeli negotiation kills daily. And while I do regret how Israeli civilians die, I can't forget women giving birth to dead infants on roadsides, dependent on teens with guns to let the doctors buy, while Israeli negotiation kills daily. So our children throw rocks, with or without slingshots, because no, we won't be tricked by their blankets infected with smallpox, because Israeli negotiation kills daily. So as peaceful handshakes are replaced by empty food plates, my hope for a better day fades. And I cling to house keys. And I cling to worthless words in the hopes that they might be heard beyond the mortal words of this media's standard absurdity. See, the fact is, we're cast aside, forgotten like so many other lost native tribes. And some say Jesus died for our sins, but when we die, we call it self-defense against the sins of a country hell-bent on building walls and fences. We die to defend our people's existence. We die, because after all, a great preacher named Martin Luther King once said, a man who won't die for something isn't fit to live. From the narrow alleyways of refugee camps to the massive valleys of our homeland, we will return. We will be free. Bid ruh, bid them. Nefdikia Palestine.
God bless Gaza, and God bless Palestine.
And we are gathering. That's what we're doing. We're gathering here as we do every day at WBAI. We are gathering here at this family-friendly event for all Palestinians and those who support the liberation struggle, and to bring more people into the process. We are gathering here, a virtual rally, if you will, to commemorate the 75th anniversary of the Nakba, the catastrophe, the ongoing catastrophe that began in May 1948 when Zionist militias murdered and exiled millions of Palestinians in order to take their land. We are gathering and we are marking 75 years of Nakba with the Palestinians, to combine our sensitivities in support of the mobilization for a free, free Palestine. We are full of grief and we are full of anger at the latest escalation of the Nakba, the days-long attack against Gaza, where the Zionist entity has murdered dozens of Palestinians, including many children. But we ask that we direct our rage and show our respect and demonstrate our solidarity by working under the leadership and in support of the Palestinian people. We ask that you honor the martyrs of Palestine, who are the heroes of the country. They have been killed fighting against Palestinian oppressors or living in defiance of them. They represent the struggle for Palestinian liberation, and it is our duty to honor them, to carry their names, and preserve their will. And we ask you to do that by supporting this station, which will bring you this programming, and you have been listening to clips, soundtrack, a montage of sound that I've put together, all from the films that we would like to give as a gift to you for your $150 contribution to this station. I mean, we should be blowing it out of the ballpark today. The Occupation of the American Mind, Edward Said's Myth of the Class of Civilizations, The Iron Wall, Peace Propaganda in the Promised Land, Roadmap to Apartheid, A People Without a Land. Oh, and there are so many more. Occupation 101, the two-disc set. I wish we could play it all. We've been playing pieces from Max Blumenthal and Dan Cohn's Killing Gaza, and the film The War Around Us, which was the last comprehensive piece that you were listening to, which is so gripping and so deeply, deeply moving. Frankly, any one of these really deserve. These are Oscar-nominated films. But no, they're not, because of the bias, backwardness, and control that groups like AIPAC have over our media to try to write Gaza out of the narrative, certainly from other than the perspective of the Palestinian people. Well, these are some of the best documentaries that have ever been made, and I am encouraging you now, 212-209-2950, $150 pledge. You will get these films. I want to go back because time is really on the wane here. And there's an expression in law, res ipsa loquitur, the thing speaks for itself. And I think the soundtrack from these films, which we've been playing clips from, again, a sound montage there, a cornucopia of a sound from these extraordinary films, all of which are geared to be there for you as tools to sharpen your own information and knowledge, but to become the emissaries of this station and for the Palestinian people in the sense of organizing our communities to support a free, free Palestine. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Let's go back and listen to more of the sound to whet your appetite, to trigger your sensitivities, and for you to get these films, support the station that is bringing you this information, and get these films to organize for a free, free Palestine. I have to say, I make no apology when I think about the Biden administration, and when he was Senator Joseph Biden, who, stepped up the ante for a $3 billion investment of overwhelmingly military wear to destroy the Palestinian people. That was the support of Israel. And that was going back to when it was Senator Biden in 1986. So let's go back to the sound now while you continue to call there's only a couple of, film box sets left. But don't let that deter you. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out if we go over our what we have that has been donated by the filmmakers. All for you. We must respond to Israeli policy in the region, which is tearing families apart, killing people, destroying homes. We listen to Free, Free Palestine. But again, the number, 212-209-2950. Please call.
And I think Americans largely get it. They know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are.
This strip of land is being bombarded from the air, sea, and land.
Israel launched at least 160 strikes on the Gaza Strip.
And there's one less hospital in Gaza now.
This is the latest CNN ORC poll of Americans. Shows 57% of those polls say Israel's action in Gaza is justified. 34% say unjustified.
A man's got to do what a man's got to do, and you'd say a country's got to do what a country's got to do. We have to defend ourselves.
It's very difficult to divorce public opinion on any question from the media coverage that people rely on to form opinions. And I think the most prevalent lesson from looking at the coverage is that the coverage tends to see this conflict from the Israeli side.
Israel is a state that implements its right to defend itself and its citizens.
We hear over and over again that the conflict comes down to Palestinian terrorism and Israeli security.
If rockets fly on your head, you're allowed to defend yourself.
And what gets pushed out of the frame entirely is the fact now that for almost 50 years, Palestinians have been systematically dispossessed from their land and denied their most basic human rights.
They have been able to effectively defend the indefensible to the American public through miseducation and misinformation campaigns, through effective talking points.
What would you do? More than 3,000 rockets have been fired on your cities.
Any advertising executive will tell you the essence of propaganda is repetition.
Israel has a right to defend itself against rocket and tunnel attacks from Hamas.
Israel is under siege by a terrorist organization.
The American political class has basically swallowed the line, hook, line, and sinker.
This administration will always stand up for Israel. Right to defend itself.
The other area where this is largely true, I would say, is the media.
Why is Hamas launching missiles into population centers of Israel?
Our national media is a scandal when it comes to Israel.
They're always preparing Americans for an attack against these people who are incorrigible terrorists and never, ever giving the other side of the story.
Well, Hamas rockets rain down on Israeli border towns.
Israel's mechanism of projecting its propaganda, or what they call Hasbara, is a weapon of Israeli warfare.
This is the beautiful land of Israel and Palestine.
The world's three most prominent religions, Islam, Christianity, and Judaism, consider it holy land. Each year, millions of people from around the world come here to pray for peace and prosperity. Yet this land is also a major center of conflict in the world today. For Jewish Israelis, the conflict centers on protecting a homeland created for the Jewish people in 1948. For Palestinians, it is about resisting decades of colonialism, expulsion, occupation, and apartheid. Most people identify apartheid with the grotesque system of control that existed in South Africa from 1948 to 1994, in which the white minority ruled over the black majority, stole their land, and deprived them of basic rights. It was a system reviled by the whole world, and it eventually crumbled under the combined pressure of internal resistance and international sanctions. Today, the word is back, and with it too is a growing global movement to end the Israeli form of apartheid.
Which solution do you prefer?
I prefer the one-state solution. One state, two people equally. And every religion is free. Jewish or Christians or Muslims. Even Buddhists, if they want to come here. Atheist, anybody is welcome to live in this country peacefully.
These two people cannot live together today in the same state. It is not possible. The hatred, the fear, the history, the bloodshed that took place here cannot be healed in a one-state framework.
The political parties of the two nationalities, even ones that may agree on certain internal issues, would be incapable of putting together any kind of functioning government. The much more serious threat is that the communal conflicts would turn violent.
What we live every day and what people think, contrary to what I think about reality, people who are opposing to the one-state solution are living in a one-state solution. But in the one-state solution,
they are living in what will be one day one-state solution.
And they are living in this one state as privileged citizens, and they are living in this one state as with a fellow governed who are under citizens, who are non-citizens of the same state.
Of course, I've never been anything but a one-state supporter. Let's look at this in two stages and not mix them up together. Stage one, is it a good idea? Never mind whether we can have it or not. I just want to know the answer. Do you think it's a good idea for these two peoples to share this land, to end this misery and conflict, let the poor people thrown out in refugee camps come home and everybody calm down? Do you think that is a good idea? Now, you'd be amazed. If ever I ask this question, nobody ever says yes, no to that idea. They immediately say, oh, yeah, but how is it going to be done? And what I say to them, look, just a moment, just first tell me, do you think it's a good idea? Now, once you get a mass of people saying, yes, what a good idea, why the hell have we been worrying and bothering with all these thoughts? What about that? Once you get to that stage, the next stage is, how do we do it?
My vision for a one-state solution is a secular democratic state, which promotes what I call ethical coexistence, which means coexistence without oppression, without anybody being master, anybody being slave. This would have to be based on equality. of all humans, regardless of ethnicity, national origin, gender, and so on and so forth. This is very important. Equality is the most fundamental principle.
Equality. Decolonization. Decolonization means that there's an end to colonial rule and occupation in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, that Palestinian citizens of Israel have equality, and that Palestinian refugees who wish to return and are currently excluded from doing so just because they're not Jews are allowed to return. For Israeli Jews, it means exchanging a privileged colonial status for citizenship.
Political Zionism has run its course. The state of Israel is not sustainable. This ethno-nationalism is not sustainable. The Arabs are here still. And we're going to have to go back at some point, when we go back to 48 and before, and we start to reinvent ourselves, and we start to think of how can we create here a binational reality of these two peoples living together, but binational. I'm not saying we're giving up our national claims. We still remain Zionists in that sense. Binational means, yes, the Jews here are national. You know, so that I want to keep the Hebrew University. I want to keep the Hebrew language. I'm not saying that we should, but it has to be expressed. Our nationalism has to be expressed in a way that in which we're a part of the Middle East and in which we can reconcile with the Palestinians and the other Arabs with whom we're living.
Well, you're listening to Free, Free Palestine. We've been virtually rallying for a Free, Free Palestine. We've been gathering over our home base, in our home base, WBAI, for a Free, Free Palestine. And we are now saying that the work has to continue. The greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. A thought-provoking and powerful series of documentary films on the current and historic root causes of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict we have prepared for you. Unlike any other series of films available, they present a comprehensive analysis of the facts and hidden truths surrounding the never-ending seeming controversy and dispel many, many of the long-perceived myths and misconceptions. These films detail life under Israeli military rule, the role of the United States in the conflict, and the major obstacles that stand in the way of a lasting and viable peace. The root conflict is explained through firsthand on-the-ground experiences from leading Middle East scholars and peace activists, journalists, religious leaders, humanitarian workers whose voices have too often been suppressed in American media outlets. These films all cover a wide range of topics, from the first wave of Jewish immigration from Europe in the 1880s, the 1920 tensions, the 1948 war, the 1967 war, the first Intifada of 1987, the Oslo peace process, the settlement expansion, the role of the United States government, the second Intifada of 2000, the separation barrier, and the Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, as well as its occupation and creation of the largest open-air prison in the world. So many heart-wrenching, important, though, testimonials as well from victims of this tragedy. Well, we have just a minute left to tell you that you can get all these films, A People Without a Land, The Roadmap to Apartheid, Peace Propaganda and the Promised Land, The Iron Wall, The Occupation of the American Mind, The Clash of Civilizations, Edward Said, The War Around Us, Killing Gaza, Occupation 101, and more, and all the poetry and all the music that you heard today as part of it. And all you have to do is call 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. We have 10 box sets left, 10 box sets, and they are only going to be offered during this program. When you call 212-209-2950, ask for Free Palestine, $150 contribution, an incredible pricing that we have put on a priceless, otherwise priceless package of information to educate, agitate, and organize for a free Palestine. I'm Mimi Rosenberg. You've been listening to Equal Rights and Justice, bringing you free Palestine. Continue to call, $150, otherwise priceless, for free Palestine, 212-209-2950. Thanks. Oh, gee, was only a couple of more packages left. Keep calling. Make sure they all disappear and get used by you. Thank you, and continue to organize for free Palestine.
Eating mostly plant foods like fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and beans is good for your health.
I use beans instead of meat.